Hiya! Hey guys, welcome to the Tokyo Munchies podcast. We talk about Japanese candy, snacks, chocolate. We talk about the Tokyo weather, the Japan news, walking in my garden with Kyle while sitting in the pool. Also, we talk about 10 Sucker Sports, JapanRumAndBox.com, and Skateboarding Japan. So, drop by, check out our podcast. And as always, this is Kyle from Tokyo Munchies. Hiya! Come and get some.
And welcome to Everyone Has a Story. I am your host, Nate Wade, and I am back in the saddle again. And I thought very, very much about singing that song by Aerosmith, you know, back in the saddle again. But I'm going to spare your ear holes that terrible nightmare that would be my singing. How does that sound? Does that sound good? Okay, let's just forget that I even mentioned it. We have Moxie LaBouche on the show today. She is the host of her podcast called Your Brain on Facts. And let me tell you, if there is an indie podcast that ranks in the upper echelons of indie podcasting, it is definitely Your Brain on Facts. If you've never listened to the podcast, you simply must check it out. But until then, why don't you find out a little about the show's host? That's Moxie, coming right up here in just a few minutes. How is everybody doing? I am so glad to be back in the game of podcasting. I would probably be well past my 100th episode by now, but I keep on having to take breaks thanks to work. This crazy time right now, everybody seems to have been on a quarantine, a lockdown, and had a lot of time on their hands, and my life has been exactly the opposite. And I am not complaining, because it's better than being stuck doing nothing, right? Or being out of work, for that matter. I work in the agriculture industry, as most of you know. I look at potatoes and all that kind of stuff, and I've pretty much went from a QA person to whatever they want me to do person. So we have a crop that has come up from California to get through our summer months. I know it's weird, but we have transported potatoes from California to Idaho. That's strange. You don't usually have potatoes going into Idaho, they're usually going out of Idaho. So my job was to find spaces for these potatoes and make sure they get into the cellars that we had found for them to go into. So for a month and a half, I dealt with nothing but trying to make sure that all of these potatoes fit in the various cellars that we had for them and dealing with truckers on a daily basis. It was fun, let me tell you. Luckily, I had a partner that helped me out, and she was, I'll tell you what, she was a godsend, because if it wasn't for her, I am not sure that I would have been as successful as I was. So I'm very happy that she was there. It's just been crazy, I'm telling you. But I am very happy to be back, as I said. All right, I want to tell you just a little bit about a great podcast that I've been listening to. It's available for your listening pleasure. It is called $10K Dollar Day, hosted by Allison Burns and Lulu Picard. It's a comedy podcast that kind of bills itself as an imaginary luxury travel show. They take $10,000, imaginary dollars, of course, and they spend it somewhere around the world. And how would you like to take $10,000 on your trip and spend it just basically in a one day? Basically, you know, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? I don't know. I'm lucky if I get $10. I'm just saying. So $10,000, that would be luxury travel for me. Well, Allison and Lulu talk about how they would spend their money, and they've got some great ideas, maybe some that you could actually use if you ever went to the places they talk about. So you can check out their full Imaginary Travel podcast that releases every Wednesday. They also have a Saturday podcast that features bonus material and interviews. And they also have what they call the Daily Happy, which is a 10-minute podcast that comes out every day. It's kind of like sitting in a coffee shop and listening to two friends have a conversation at the table next to you, except these guys don't mind the fact that your head is now tilted towards their table and you're now invading their personal space. In fact, they kind of want to just say, hey, come on over and join us and let's have a conversation together. So make sure you check out all three of those podcasts. It's well worth your time. That's $10K Dollar Day. If you want to find out more about $10K Dollar Day and their various podcasts, you can go to 10kdollarday.com. That's 10kdollarday.com. Don't miss it. It is a fantastic podcast. So, you know, things have went crazy since the last time that we spoke. You know, we've had the continuous protests and riots and things like that. And I'm not going to delve on that. If you want to know my thoughts on that, you can go back and listen to my last couple of podcasts in which I lay out, no uncertain terms, what I believe, I guess you could say, in that area. But right now I'm going to talk about masks. Never in a million. This is 2020. I am 46 years old in a couple of days. I've never thought in a million years that a mask would be something that becomes political. I can't believe it, literally. I mean, you're either mad because somebody isn't wearing a mask, or you're mad because somebody is wearing a mask. If you think somebody's wearing a mask and you call them a sheeple, and next thing you know, they're going to be heading into boxcars to some sort of concentration camp and be, you know, subject of gas chambers, at least that's what people on Facebook are telling me. Or on the other side, you think that people are terrible and evil because they're not wearing their mask, and so they don't care about humanity, and the world is going to blow up and die because they're not wearing their mask. You know what? It's a mask. It's probably best if we all try to wear it, because I don't know about you, but I don't want to go back into the lockdown that we experienced about a month and a half, 2 months ago. And most of these small businesses that I know do not want to go into that lockdown either. The ones that are still around barely survived. I can guarantee it. And so to keep them from having to close their doors, don't you think it would be a good idea if we wore a mask? You know, and if you don't want to wear a mask outside, I guess that's probably your prerogative. And I agree with that. But if you want to go into a store, don't be an ass. Wear your freaking mask. It's stupid if you don't. And if you think that you're being some sort of patriot, or that you're helping support your constitutional rights, you're just being a dumb idiot. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. If a small business asks you to wear their mask, then wear the frickin' mask. If Kroger's asks you to wear the mask, wear the frickin' mask, okay? You want to walk down the sidewalk, you don't want to wear a mask, then don't wear the mask. You don't want to wear the mask in your house, then don't wear the mask in your house. But if you think you're being some sort of awesome person and how you totally, you know, are supporting your constitutional rights, no, you're just being stupid. So wear the mask, okay? All right, I'm going to get off my high horse as far as the mask is concerned, but it's just mind-boggling. I got to stay off of Facebook because my head's about ready to explode, right? I mean, of course, that's been the case with Facebook for quite a while now. But I tell you, it just keeps on getting worse. It doesn't keep on getting better. We are so divided in this country. It's mind-boggling. And we get divided over the dumbest things. People are on crusades over stupid pieces of cloth we put on our face. Come on! There are so much more important things to worry about than that. It's just stupid. Okay, that's all I got to say. All right. So we're going to get into this week's episode. Again, Maxi LaBouche, if you haven't checked out her podcast, you need to do so. It's called Your Brain on Facts. And you can find that at yourbrainonfacts.com, or you can go wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, any of those places like that. And so without any further ado, here is Maxi LaBouche on Everyone Has a Story.
I'm from Richmond, Virginia, where things are both metaphorically and literally on fire lately. And I've been here three quarters of my life. So I would say definitively that, you know, I'm from Richmond.
Yeah. Okay. So what you say, you said it's on fire. Explain exactly what you mean.
Well, we have this beautiful tree-lined street that runs through town called Monument Avenue. And every third block has a large Confederate general statue. Or at least they did, because thankfully we've started ripping them down, and then judges are issuing injunctions that are stopping the city from taking them down, and it's kind of a mess, and there have been protests, and we've gone through three police chiefs in the span of 11 days last month. And so there were some nights where there were periods of excitation. Mm-hmm. After the peaceful protests. Sure. and a couple of things, like the first night it was a city bus got burned to a shell. But apart from that, everything's lovely.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess it keeps things interesting. I live in Idaho Falls, Idaho. We have not had that much excitement around here. About the only thing that's been crazy was the 4th of July, and that was about it. We didn't have a fireworks show thanks to the virus. And so everybody else decided they would make up for that fact. And so it was very loud and very smoky around here. But yeah, Idaho has kind of been, we're kind of immune from a lot of those kind of things out here. I guess maybe just of our lack of population or whatever. I'm not quite sure. But so how was it like growing up in Virginia?
Well, since it's the only thing I have reference for, it's, you know, it's difficult to say. That's like asking me, what's it like growing up female, or what's it like growing up short? It's not like I can compare to another childhood. It's as good a place as any. Richmond's a funny city in that it's the state capital, mm-hmm. but it's not a big city as big cities go. So we lack some of the infrastructure you would expect to see in a major city, like subway or buses that run all night, things of that nature. It's mostly suburban sprawl. And people who come from larger cities like to complain about Richmond not being big enough. And people who come from, you know, rural areas complain that it's too big. I think it's just right. And besides which, everybody's got to be somewhere. And this is where I am.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. Tell me a little bit about your childhood. Was it a happy childhood? Parents married, divorced?
Yeah, I had one of each, a mother and a father, as well as five sisters, of which I am the second oldest.
Oh, wow.
And interestingly, half of us are blondes like mom and half are brunettes like dad. And only the brunettes like dad can do math.
All righty. And so why is that? I mean, is this just kind of the way it seems to happen or what?
Well, that's the old nature versus nurture debate, isn't it?
I guess,
for whatever reason, the ones who took after dad's hair color also got his math skills, whereas the blondes tend to be more word oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely don't have math skills.
Fair enough. So then how was school for you? Did you struggle through school or did you do pretty good?
Focus and concentration were the only struggle areas, constant struggle. In fact, recently people have been like, oh, I bet you're using this quarantine time to get lots of work done on the podcast and get ahead of the podcast. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No amount of quarantine can affect my ADHD. In fact, the lack of a hard deadline, I've been quarantined at home. I've been isolated since March the 3rd. It is presently July the 11th. Hmm. The lack of short deadlines provided by a work schedule outside of the home means it's even harder to get my stuff done. And someone listening who has ADD or ADHD is nodding vigorously as they hear me say that, because it seems like we can only work under short deadlines. Don't give me 6 weeks to do the project, because I'm still only going to do it the day before.
I can relate to that. Yeah, for sure. It takes me a lot of stress and like, oh my gosh, that deadline lurking to get things done. If I don't, then as you said, I just kind of put things off until the last minute. So I can definitely relate to that. High school. Did you have fun in high school? Did you do sports or?
No. I don't like to get sweaty.
Okay. Fair enough.
No. I was really athletic when I was little, always, you know, running and climbing trees and stuff of that nature. I just never was interested in sports. I almost got into field hockey until I found out that practice starts in August. And this is Virginia, where only Florida can compete with us, I think, in terms of, well, maybe parts of South Carolina, when it comes to humidity. So I'm like, no, I am not going to run around outside in August. Thank you very much.
All right. That's fair. So got through high school. Did you go to college after high school or what were you?
I am a three-time community college dropout.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Well, if at least I'm not saddled with the student loan debt that my next younger sister has for her liberal arts degree, which has done her so well when managing a GameStop.
Mm-hmm. So was that through the course of your life that you tried to go to college a couple of times, or was that all pretty much right there in your early 20s? Or
pretty much all right in a row. Well, first there was the discovery that nobody takes attendance and you have a car. You can just leave and nobody cares. And that is like a bowl of candy. That is utterly irresistible. I don't have the strength of willpower for that. And, you know, you still have to slog through all of those core education classes, you know.
Right, right.
Doing life and pursued something vocational.
Sure.
You know, like I finally did find something I was interested in, which was ASL, and I wanted to become an interpreter. All of the ASL courses were in the evenings, and it was at the same time that I started my goat farm. And all of the classes were at the same time I was supposed to be milking the goats in the evening. Okay. So since I'd already bought livestock, I was like, well, I guess this decision's made for me.
So what made you decide to start a goat farm?
It doesn't take much to blow me one direction or another. Just an idea will grab me, and that's about it. Uh-huh. I was in my last apartment with my then fiance, now ex-husband, mm-hmm. and we're kind of deciding, you know, what we wanted to do, where we want to go in life. And I had this old Reader's Digest Back to Basics book, and there were two pages on dairy goats. And I thought, oh, wait, because I was raised on a little goat and chicken homestead, and I have fond memories of it because I was too small to do any real work. Mm. My job was to help gather eggs. That was about it. So I'm like, oh, I remember having goats. Goats were fun. Yeah, we'll do this. We'll find some land, and we'll get some goats, and it'll be great. And we did find some land. We lucked actually into what had been a farm right in the middle of the suburbs. There's a subdivision built on land that used to belong to my property. So we're hemmed in by subdivisions on all sides of our 6 acres. And I got the goats, and like everything in life, I launched into it without preparation. So we were every day trying to keep the fence up ahead of them, because goats will go over, under, around, and through anything. But I raised goats and made goat milk soap and skincare products, which is how I made my living. Did that for about 13 years.
Okay.
During the course of which I was struck by lightning.
Oh, yep. All right. Well, what were you doing when you got struck by lightning?
It was during a summer evening downpour. Uh-huh. I was standing at the gate with my hand on the fence, yelling at a goat named Cyanide to try to get her to come out of the barn and over to the milk house so I could milk her. And she was like, no, turn off the sky water and then I'll come out. Because I'm convinced that they thought that I caused their food to appear. So, you know, why couldn't I cause everything else to happen?
Why not? That's right.
And all of a sudden there was this crack, this noise, just as loud as anything I've ever heard. It sounded like it was 3 feet above my head. And as I was falling into the mud, I had three distinct thoughts in an instant. Stupid electric fence. The electric fence has been unplugged for a month. I think I've just been struck by lightning. Mm. I may have lost consciousness for a second or two. I certainly couldn't move the hand that had been on the fence for a good few minutes. What had happened was a bolt of lightning had hit the house, lit it on fire, and then dissipated out through the mud to the fence where I was standing. So luckily it wasn't a direct strike. But sure. It did scramble my brain a little bit. I couldn't do arithmetic in my head for a couple of weeks. My logic center was just shot for a while. And I have some pretty bad memory issues to this day. Like, I have to turn to my husband and be like, do we own a table saw?
Oh, wow.
Which is the sort of thing you think you'd remember. You know?
Right. Yeah.
So I have all of these facts from doing my you know, weird history and trivia podcast, but I don't know where they are. So my brain is an encyclopedia, but the pages have all been torn out and are being strewn around the room by squirrels.
Okay. So what happened to the house? Did it cause a big fire, or what happened there?
It was significant, and it had to be torn down to the studs and redone. This wasn't even my first fire in this property. About 7 years earlier, we'd had a fire the week before Christmas, of course, because somebody has to get burned out of their house the week before Christmas.
Right.
But I believe that one was caused by a 15-year-old Himalayan cat who decided that she wanted to be where the oil lamp was.
Oh,
so the oil lamp had to go.
Aha.
So she knocked it off the sideboard onto the carpet, where it lit the carpet on fire, and she just came trotting back to the other end of the house like nothing was wrong.
Oh, goodness.
You know, assuming no responsibility whatsoever.
Right. Oh, man. Okay, so a few fires in your house. One that was obviously significant enough where you had to rebuild the house.
Yeah, both times it had to be torn down to the studs.
Both of times.
Yeah, but there's always a silver lining, because the original part of the house was completed in 1870. Mm-hmm. And then the previous owners would build a carport attached to it. And then they'd close that in and make it a room and build a mud room on it. And then they decide that they want that to be a room. So it was this weird hodgepodge of tacked on stuff. Like you could open cabinets and see exterior siding at the back of them.
Yeah.
And nothing was done to code. There were never permits. Uh-huh. So the plus side of the fires is that to repair the house, they have to bring it up to code.
Sure.
So it has to be wired properly. And because we had like floor mounted outlets and cotton wrapped wiring.
Oh, wow.
Just like my mother couldn't believe that wasn't the cause of the electrical system in the house wasn't the cause of the fire, of either fire. But yeah, so there's always a silver lining in a situation. And I loved that we got rid of the original plaster and lath walls, because you ever try to hang a picture in a plaster wall?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, there's a reason we all use drywall now.
Right, exactly.
Plaster sucks.
Yeah, it does indeed. So at some point, do you become a high risk as far as your insurance company is concerned?
You would think I would be a lower risk. I mean, statistically, how many times does a person have a fire? But the first company definitely dropped us like a hot rock immediately after. The second company... we're still with, but they're not paying me any money, so I'm not going to name them by name.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so you did the goat farm for about 13 years, and did you enjoy it? Did you finally get tired of it, or what happened?
Well, yeah, I did enjoy it for most of the time, and then I started to get burned out because I was doing it 90% myself. My first husband had a number of health issues. He'd had 4 spinal surgeries and was in terrible chronic pain, but he didn't do the things he could have done to help. And after, you know, more than a decade of being his nurse and running the farm myself, I got sick of both the goats and him and made some sweeping changes.
Gotcha. So that's enough. No more. Okay. And so what, when were we talking here? This is 90s, 2000s?
So the farm was from 2000 to the early teens.
Okay, gotcha. And so what did you decide to do after that?
Well, I just went back to retail, which has always been my life, because even when I was goat farming, I sold my products at farmers markets and craft shows and street fairs and things like that. So it was still standing behind a cash register, which is who I am. It's what I do. That and occasionally over to the Amazon warehouse, which definitely colors your impulse to just grab your phone and order something on Amazon because you're thinking about it. You know, you maybe shop around a little bit more after you've had to work there.
Yeah. My daughter-in-law actually works at the Amazon warehouse in Boise, Idaho, and she has a few stories there.
I mean, people set fires to get out of their shift.
Oh, really?
I'm not saying it's not like how some of the early warehouses, there was no air conditioning. There were areas where static would build up so much that it would hurt people.
But no Steinbeck kind of thing going on here.
It's not Slaughterhouse 5, okay. but it's a slog. It's a real grind, a real slog. And if you've already burned up all of your time off, but you don't want to be there that day, apparently setting fire to a trash can is the best way to get out of work, in the opinion of at least 3 people.
Really?
In the time that I was there. That happened 3 times in the couple of years I was there.
Sure. Okay. One is interesting, but 3 people? Okay. That's all righty. So retail then, I mean, do you just like just a normal warehouse type store normally, or where do you, you know, what kind of stuff do you do in retail?
Usually cashier, usually like on the front lines with the customers, because it's just what I've always enjoyed and what I'm good at. Fairly recently, I worked at an Aldi, which if you don't have them in your area, is a low-cost grocery store. It's a model brought over from Germany where we are super fast because we just fling your stuff across the scanner bed and into an empty cart. And then we switch shopping carts and you bag your own stuff. And I have a competitive streak. So since our units per hour are posted in the office every week, I'm like, oh, well, I got to be faster than everybody here for sure. And like one guy started to close in on me. I'm like, well, we're not having that. I got this one thing going for me, and it's being the fastest cashier out of the 7 of us at this one particular Aldi.
So are you pretty outgoing then? I mean, because it takes a special type of person, really, especially to enjoy retail. I've worked retail quite a few years in my life, and I got to say there have been plenty of times where I'm just like, I have had enough of retail. Because I've had enough of people. But so, I mean, tell me a little bit about your personality. You must be a little bit outgoing, or at least like people in general.
As soon as I get the slightest bit comfortable in a situation, I just, it's full tilt. So I go straight from 0 to 11. So I'm really reserved when I'm in an uncomfortable situation. I always prefer to be in my comfort zone. But if I have to leave my comfort zone, the second I begin to get comfortable in the new situation, that's when a warts and all the personality comes out, which is usually when stuff starts to go downhill. Cause I talk too much. I have no filter, and it gets gotten me into trouble innumerable times, but can't seem to do anything about it. So just got to roll with it. And retail, just like with hospitality, with service, cause you'll know people who have been servers their whole life or bartenders their whole life. And it's not because they're not capable of doing anything else. It's because they're good at it and they like it. Right. And, you know, this is what I'm good at. Though I do believe for every 10 years that you're in retail or hospitality, you should be allowed to legally murder one person. Just want one every 10 years, like the samurai code. You know how they were allowed to kill people in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
And for me, it would be the next person who says, oh, it didn't scan. It must be free.
I know. I've heard that in a few stores I've worked at. It's like, oh, well, you can't find it. It must be free, or there's no price tag on this. It must be free. I'm like, come on.
Like, do really? You seriously think that's funny? Do you think that's new? Do you think you're the one that came up with that?
Exactly.
Deadpan saying, only if you can outrun me.
There you go. That's not bad.
because I'm turning it around as like, so you're suggesting you should have, you know, you shouldn't have to pay for this item.
Yeah.
You're suggesting you should make free with it.
Right. Exactly.
It's just the dumbest. There's a one demographic that's worse for it than others, which of course middle-aged men are worse for it than others, but they're not the only ones. So yes, on Planet Moxie, for every 10 consecutive years you work in retail or hospitality, you get to kill one customer legally.
All right. Well, I'll keep that in mind. And hopefully I'm never a customer of yours and the one you choose to kill.
Well, don't be the guy that says it's not scanning. It must be free and you'll be fine.
I will never say that.
Then you're good.
I've never said it, nor will I ever say that. You know, I just, yeah, retail is such a special thing. And it does, like I said, it takes a special person to really enjoy it and to really enjoy their job, because you just deal with sometimes just the scourge of humanity. It's just amazing what kind of people can walk into a store and the self-entitlement that generally goes into that type of person.
Yeah. I mean, and that sort of thing has come up with the situations lately with police brutality and sort of police overreactions. Yeah. How they make, you know, pulling you over for a broken taillight and they act like it's the invasion of Poland.
Yeah.
If a cashier making $12 an hour can have a Karen screaming in their face for something they're not responsible for without tasing that person.
Yep.
You can probably do it too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Absolutely. I mean, you know, as you've probably had, I've had customers in my face, spitting in my face because they've, you know, been wronged or they've perceived some sort of wrong somewhere along the way. And you sit there and you have to take it because you really have no choice but to do that, except for maybe to say, please leave my store. But beyond that, that's the only power you've got, you know?
And you usually, if you're like me, you're not in, you don't have a position of authority to, because I'm always, you know, grunt entry level, sure. Right there on the register. So it's not like I can tell anyone to leave.
Right.
So.
Yeah. For sure. And if you're a cashier, you're taking usually the brunt of it, you know, because they've been wrong somewhere along the store. And so they're going to let that cashier have it because they're obviously.
Oh, yeah. Or we ran out of the item they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just going to yell, the mangoes aren't ripe enough.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do anything about it.
Right.
We only can put on the shelf what the warehouse sent us. The warehouse can't do anything about it. All they can do is put up what the supplier sent them, you know, so blame the supplier. I had one woman, I remember this so distinctly. I would say, hey, you find everything you need today? She, you had no burger brat. Like, what? You had no burger brat. Like, I'm sorry. What? You had no burger brat. And her daughter, like, you had no burger brat. Like, burger bread. Hamburger, but yeah, we ran out of hamburger buns at 1 o'clock. I'm sorry about that. Like, so if you want to be mad at me about running out of the fact that we ran out of hamburger buns on a weekend in the summer, sure. But don't be mad at me because I didn't know booger broad meant hamburger buns. That one's on you.
That's right. That's right. Oh my goodness. Retail stories are the best. I mean, they're great. So do you still live in that same house then that's burned down twice?
Well, we try to stay positive. We say it burnt up.
Burnt up. Okay.
Fair burnt enough. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if two fires can't get me out of here, nothing is.
All right. That's fair. That's good. What was your impetus to decide to start a podcast?
Well, my husband got me into listening to podcasts and he had to nag me for a bit about it because I had a lot of the preconceptions that are fairly common. I didn't know really 100% what they were, how you find them. How do you find a good one? How do you know you're going to like it?
Right.
And I also have this feeling like you had to stop and pay attention to it, like watching a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he had me as a captive audience, my husband put one on in the car since I couldn't get away. It was an episode of Unorthodox, which bills itself as the universe's leading Jewish podcast. And everybody should listen to it, Jew and Gentile alike. That particular episode, they were discussing, is it okay to refer to someone as a Jew or should you say a Jewish person? So it was a very interesting discussion there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Put something else on. you know, and then he introduced me to 99% Invisible. And I'm like, okay, podcasts are a thing. That's good. So I, of course, immediately subscribed to 125 of them, as you do.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know what? This could be a thing I could do. Because I had been a burlesque dancer for about 7 years. And it's always good to have a creative outlet. And I was getting out of burlesque. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this will be a cool thing. I will make a podcast. My mother had been in radio in the 60s and 70s. So all of her daughters know how to do their radio voice. That part will be easy. I'll get a mic. And it'll be a great way to vent all the useless facts in my head. Because customers at the Aldi don't necessarily want to hear that avocados have giant pits because their seeds used to be redistributed by a prehistoric ground sloth. They just want me to ring up the damn avocado and let them leave.
Right.
So I thought that a podcast would be a safe way to vent all these excess facts. The trouble is that researching and writing a 7-page script every week just puts more stuff in my brain that I can't keep straight because of the lightning.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Backfired.
So you decided that was the best way to give you an outlet to get the facts out of your brain, basically, and onto a podcast. But you said the research is a lot. I mean, your podcast is very detailed. It's unlike mine. I just sit here and interview somebody, and sometimes they go well, sometimes they don't. But for yours, I mean, they're very fact oriented. Obviously, that's, you know, the name of your podcast is Your Brain on Facts. So how much time do you spend getting one episode together?
It'll be usually between 12 and 20 hours, depending on, as mentioned, before the focus. A lot of people will do their shows off of bullet points, but I want to be very certain that I have included everything that I meant to include. It also makes it a little bit easier on the back end if I don't, because I would, if I were just doing it off the cuff, I would end up with a lot of ums and pauses and sentence restarts that I would have to then go and dig out in the edit.
Right.
So by putting the time into writing the script, that saves me time editing, except for the fact that I cannot stand mouth clicks and I have to go through and dig out each and every single little one, even though I know nobody can hear them. You know, it's not bothering anybody the way it's bothering me, but it bothers me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's actually my biggest problem. Not necessarily a mouth click, or maybe that's what you want to call it, but I have a tendency to smack my lips. And I noticed that in when I'm doing post-production, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to figure out a way to stop that. I haven't yet because it's so unconscious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody will give you the same advice. Stay hydrated, eat a green apple. Interesting, a dilute pineapple juice. So like one part pineapple juice to four parts water helps your mouth to hydrate better than just straight water. So I found that very helpful. And I also broke down and got... you know, Isotope RX7, which has a mouth declick function.
Oh, I see.
And I wish I did that 2.5 years earlier.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing your podcast then?
About 2.5 years. So February 2 years ago.
And I'm assuming you've got a pretty decent audience at this point. If not, there's a crime being taken place here.
Well, if I didn't, then I would definitely be doing it for the love of it or because I have pattern recognition problems, because that 115 episodes would be a long time to do something that nobody was listening to.
For sure. That's a good point. Fair enough. How did you mentioned that you were a burlesque dancer. What made you get into burlesque dancing?
Well, I reconnected with a friend of mine I'd gone to high school with, and he said that he did the posters for a show in town, for a burlesque show. And I'm like, burlesque is a thing? I thought burlesque had died out like in the 50s or 60s after Gypsy Rose Lee and that kind of heyday of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that people were doing burlesque still or again. It was like, I get two tickets. Do you want to go? I'm like, yes, 100% I want to go. And it was amazing because burlesque these days is what's called neo-burlesque, and there's nerdlesque, and basically anything can be burlesque. So it's not just the satin gloves and the evening gowns and the feather boas. They're still there, and they're great. Mm-hmm. But I saw a performer named Kiki Von Kitsch do an act to Menomina.
Oh, yeah.
As a big, furry, pink Muppet giant googly eye pasties with eyelashes. And at the end of the routine, she reveals that the front of her fuzzy pink G-string is a mouth, and she sings along with the song. And I was just looking up at that painted plywood stage saying, I have to do this. Burlesque is the best thing ever.
And so you did. For how long?
for about 7 years. I also produced burlesque for 5 or 6 years, and it was my distinct privilege to produce the only George R.R. Martin approved Game of Thrones burlesque show. And we actually were invited out to his theater in Santa Fe, New Mexico to play for the man himself.
Oh, wow. And so exactly what did that entail? Did you like tell the story of Game of Thrones, or what would you do exactly?
Well, that would be a lot of story to tell. In a nerdlesque show like that, you typically get people doing characters. We actually had someone, my husband, who performs under the name Dante the Inferno, do an act as George R.R. Martin.
Oh, I see.
Which you almost never see anybody do an act as the author of the books or like the director of the movie or what have you. So he did an act as George R.R. Martin in front of George R.R. Martin, you know, like lovingly making fun of him,
which
Dante said was the single most nerve-wracking experience his life.
How did Mr. Martin enjoy the show?
Oh, he liked it. And he's a really nice guy. He's kind of quiet and everybody needs to get up off his back. The book will be finished when it is finished. I think if season 8 taught us anything, it's don't push, don't rush, because one of the big names in video games says that a delayed game is only delayed for a while. A rushed game is bad forever.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
And
you can say that about anything, right? Any product is
yeah. So you want it fast or you want it good.
Right. Exactly. I recall you saying that you have published a book. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Brain on Facts is now available in physical papery form. So if for some reason you want to get the information without listening to the sound of my voice, which I understand you might be sick of by the end of this, then you can definitely contact your local bookseller. That's the preferred method. Or hop on Amazon to get Your Brain on Facts, things you didn't know, things you thought you knew, and things you never knew you never knew. That's the full title. It takes up half the cover. I don't know why the publisher went for it.
And that's available at any bookstore that you can get it through.
Well, I can't speak for every local bookseller, but definitely check with your locally owned stores first, because they need your love now more than ever. You can also order on bookshop.org, which is like a central clearinghouse for indie bookstores. So you can get it from an indie store, but still ordering with the convenience of ordering online.
Great.
And then, failing that, there's the watchword of our generation. There's always Amazon.
Yeah. Well, but I'm sure most bookstores could probably be able to special order it if they don't have it on hand, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely ask them about that.
Absolutely. Great. Well, Moxie, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Hopefully we've covered the bases. Is there anything else you want to talk about or share?
I mean, I could just drop random facts on you if you like.
You know what? We will make sure that the folks listening to this fine program will listen to your program and they'll hear the facts there, because that's what I'd rather them do, is listen to your podcast.
And they will hear many, many facts.
Yes. And folks, I'm speaking from experience. I listen to her podcast on a regular basis. Moxie's podcast is fantastic. So if you have not listened, I highly recommend you subscribe to Your Brain on Facts. It's a fantastic podcast and well worth your time. Moxie, thanks again for joining us today. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed being here.
Thank you. Moxie LaBouche here on Everyone Has a Story. Thank you so much, Moxie, for calling into the studio and sharing a little bit of time with us. Appreciate you. It's always fun and fascinating to find out a little bit more about everybody. If you guys are interested in checking out her podcast, you can do so. You can find her podcast on any podcast platform. What do they call it these days? Apple Podcasts. You can find them on Google, Spotify, or you can go to her website at yourbrainonfacts.com and check it out. You will not want to miss it, and you're going to definitely want to check out all of the back episodes. It is well worth your time. So, and you know, I was looking around on the internet and I also found out the fact that she does a TED Talk, and you're going to want to check that out because it is really fascinating stuff. She goes a little bit more in depth on the art of burlesque. So just go to Google and type in Moxie LaBouche and you're going to find out a bunch of information about her. Thanks again, Moxie, for joining us. We truly appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to Everyone Has a Story. I am so happy to be back into the podcast game. And you can find, if you want to find some merchandise, you can find it at threadless.com. You can find that link in the show notes. You can find the link for the podcast, $10K Dollar Day, and much, much more in the show notes. So please check that out. And in the meantime, we look forward to talking to you next week. I'm Nate Wade saying so long. Have a great day.